Father God, I am just learning how to pray. Bear with me. First, I thank you for the life of everyone that's here with me. Then I thank you for the love you give me. Why? I don't know. I don't deserve it, and it hurts inside. Many a nights I cried and called your name out loud, but didn't call you when I was doing good, too proud. And still you gave me love. I wasn't used to that. Most of the people that gave me love ended up taking it back. That's something new to me. So I'm asking you for time to adjust. Let me make it there. I will be one you can trust. What I stand for, I put my life on. I do. I guess what I'm asking is, show me how to stand for you. And I will rap for you, sing for you, reach for you, preach for you, teach for you. I will love you like you love me, unconditionally. And I will always be prepared for whatever the mission will be. Give the nutrition to me, and I'll properly digest it. And when I give it back, I will show you word well invested. And whenever I go, before I go, let me give. Thanks to you, Lord, for my birth, for every day that I've lived. You gave me a love most of my life I didn't know was there. I give you my life because you cared. Amen.
Amen.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman, can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
What up?
Obviously, before we go any further, we had to do what we had to do and send prayers up to DMX after last week's episode. Things... From the details I got, friend, things were never turned the right way. Mm-hmm. After the full details have come out, apparently DMX was without oxygen to his brain for about 30 minutes before they found him.
Oh, wow.
I think the official news is that it was an overdose last week. There's been a whole bunch of conflicting stories
like
this whole week.
Like a heart attack caused by an overdose.
Yeah. Either way, his brain was without oxygen for about 30 minutes. So there was no coming back from that. So he was being kept alive for this whole week. On life support.
Yeah.
And on Thursday or Friday night, his family decided to take him off life support. And
so are you essentially dead already at that point?
Yeah. If you have no brain function, there's no like, hey, man, fight through this. Like, there's no turning around. You know, like, there's no, sometimes people can be in a coma, mm-hmm. but if there's some brain function, you have hope that, you know, they'll snap out of it at some point. But, your brain's without oxygen for 30 minutes, maybe even up like as little as like 7 to 10 minutes, you could become brain dead. And if you're brain dead, there's no no fixing that. You can't breathe on your own. Your brain controls your whole body.
Right.
So you can be kept, your organs could be kept alive with machines, but if your brain never comes back, you aren't alive anymore.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty trippy. Like, I don't even know what is your state? Like, are you just gone at that point?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's really crazy.
Because all these machines are keeping
you. That's what you would think. If your brain's dead, there's no activity.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting state to be in. Because, like, you are alive, but your brain is not alive.
Yeah.
So what are you? Are you just, like, a fleshy, you know, corpse being kept alive with machines? Like, is the essence of you still in there? It can't be if your brain doesn't.
Well, I'm guessing you're. The body wouldn't work without the machine. Then it,
no,
right.
Once you unplug they're not there anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Actress and comedian Lunell actually got into a little bit of a like Twitter trouble, like, which is nothing. She was in Borat. She's like a short blonde haired comedian.
What's her name?
Lunell.
Oh,
you either know her or you don't. She hasn't been in a lot of stuff, but she's a comedian. She was like, she sparked the DMX is dead thing. The day before he died, like she made an announcement prematurely with no facts.
Who is she?
I guess she's a friend of his. I don't really know how she knows him. I guess she's a friend of his. But the point is, like, everybody started sending out tweets like
R.I.P.
as if he was dead.
Yeah.
So she kind of sparked that wave of stuff, and then nobody was doing any resource checking or looking who the source was.
Yeah.
And then once people saw a message from his former manager saying he is still alive, he's being kept alive on life support, so he's not dead. So. That's not true. And so she kind of caught some heat for like an hour or so on Twitter. It was the topic of the night that night. But then the next day or the next night, he was pronounced dead. So, you know.
But did they went at, like, what's her name, Kerry Washington or something? They went at her about it, too?
Well, Kerry Washington said, because Prince, one of those princes, I don't know what made American people so interested in the UK family.
Yeah, yeah.
Even before Meghan Markle, I feel like some people were like, the royal weddings and stuff. One of those people died, Prince William or,
yeah.
not, no, but like Prince Philip, the
Yeah,
the
yeah.
queen's
the queen's
the queen's
I
husband.
I didn't know that's how it worked though. I looked it up. I was like, I thought if the I thought either if way, the, you know,
queen is the king.
Is the king, but yeah. the queen when she
well,
married,
none of it
he's the prince.
None of it means anything anymore.
Yeah, but I just didn't know. I didn't know it's the prince is married to the queen.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I thought the prince was
the you thought the queen. Son, oh, the, was like what was her the, son?
Yeah.
So how did you think?
I was like, what the.
Is she 137 years old?
Yeah, I was like, what the
you thought that was
94. She's like 92. I was like,
he's
what?
99.
Oh, she. Man, well, she's like nine. They like 2 years apart or something.
Yeah, the whole thing is fucking crazy. But yeah. That Kerry Washington was like, man, I wonder what DMX and Prince Philip are talking about up in heaven. Like as if DMX would spend a minute of his time with a 99-year-old British dude. Tupac's up there, all kind of Bernie Mac. Like it's all kind of interesting people up there. You think he's gonna spend? He doesn't even. I bet DMX doesn't even know who that is. I would bet money.
I didn't know who he was.
I don't know, and I don't care. You know, like you know, rest in peace to him.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like he was 99 years old. What are we gonna be sad about it? He lived a life. He was a prince.
Yeah.
People were like the news outlets were like, yeah, there's some rumors that you know his heart was just so broken after what Meghan Markle and Prince.
Really?
He was a 99 years old.
He's an old man.
He's been dead for like 10 years.
Yeah. Stop.
I mean, what? have you ever seen him?
Yeah, I've seen him.
Oh God, he looks so bad. Sometimes she's like Cicely Tyson looked great. She died. She was like 95. Rest in peace, Cicely Tyson.
Yeah,
black, not just black, an entertainment legend. Been to some of the most amazing performances. She was like 95 or something when she died. Looked gorgeous. Mm-hmm. This man looked like a zombie.
Yeah.
And
well, black
so,
don't crack, so
yeah, it was very true.
Yeah,
even if into the 90s, it really is impressive.
Yeah,
but my point is,
have
like,
you seen my grandma?
Yeah, it's very true. Right. But my point is that rest in peace, man. I don't know, but like, what are we gonna? He's 99 years old.
Yeah,
you did it, man. You did it.
I'd have been pissed
if you didn't make it to 100.
99,
that close, God, you know.
Damn it.
Yeah. Also, when you have the resources to be like, my heart's failing, bring me a young boy's heart now. Like, bring me a fresh heart. Like, they have that kind of money. But yeah, I don't really have any takes on the royal family or anything. You know, from the research I've done, they're pretty awful, and I don't give a shit about anything that they do. But shout out to Meghan Markle and that redheaded fella that she's married to, that prince. I don't care about any of that stuff. But rest in peace to DMX. That's what I do care about. Rest in peace to DMX. An absolute legend, man. We got to stop. I'm tired of losing these legends. It's so young, man. I mean, Prince was in his early 50s.
Was he?
Yeah, Prince wasn't that old.
Hmm.
Michael Jackson was like 52 years old. DMX, 50. You know, I'm just tired of it, man. These people, and that's why just last week, I mean, you know, it was before he officially passed, but it's like, you gotta give people their flowers while they're still here, man. Because you just never know. Like, you know, 50 years old, bro.
Yeah.
And battled addiction his whole life. Got addicted to crack cocaine when he was 14. A buddy, a mentor of his, like an older dude that he really looked up to, laced his blunt with crack cocaine. And he didn't even smoke weed. He just was like looked up to an older guy.
And that's how he got addicted to it.
Yeah. The addiction. One time, smoked crack one time, and he didn't even like weed like that. But his buddy was like. He was older than him, so he was like a big brother to him. He's like, come on, man, take part in this.
Look at that, and look at the end result, all them years.
His whole, till he died.
That's great.
Because you can't make people do that. Like, you either are ready to get clean or you're not. You can't, like, make people get clean for whatever reason. You know, because he had a whole engine behind him that's like, hey, man, like, we need you to make another platinum album.
Yeah.
He had all the best people around him to force him to do something. And if it's not something that he wanted to be a part of, you can't make somebody do that. And there's no greater sign of that than DMX. The dude went platinum twice in 1 year. He put out 2 albums in 1 year, and both of them went platinum.
Yeah.
Movie star. He did all of this stuff, man. And his whole career got derailed because he was battling addiction for all those years, man.
That's crazy.
You know? And what a testament to how addiction shouldn't be able to hold you back and can't hold you back, but we just have such a stigma in society where it's like, oh, he's a crackhead, or this person's a heroin addict, so don't look past them. Don't worry about them. There's so much talent being unused and wasted, because we have this like, oh, once you're a drug addict, you're not useful to society anymore. DMX was a devoutly religious guy to the end.
Yeah.
As you guys heard at the beginning, we played in one of his prayers. He prayed at every show that he did. Made some of the hardest and made some of the hardest shit you ever heard in your life, yeah. DMX. I mean, DMX revolutionized music when he came out, when he did. Because if you remember, when DMX came out, it was Bad Boy era. Mm-hmm. So it was like Mace and we're partying and bring the champagne and the shiny suits and the haircuts, mm-hmm. and the, you know, all this time. He came out and, man, fuck all. I mean, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, damn. Like, yeah. Shit was crazy. Blue global.
The Rough Riders just blew up.
Oh, man. I can't really, you know, I know our audience is, you know, probably not. There's definitely a ton of people who understand what we're saying, but there's definitely a lot of people listening who don't really understand what we're describing. But when the Rough Riders anthem came out, it's hard to even really explain.
That's
what
one
that
of my
was
favorite beats.
One of my favorite beats. One of my favorite music videos. Yeah. It takes me back to a crazy time when I was just a young kid. I had cousins who were like 17 and in the streets and cool. And I was like, oh my god, I just want a Rough Riders vest.
Yeah, the jersey.
I want to be on a quad bike. I want to be on a four wheeler, like in the streets. Like, you just don't understand what that movement was like. And it was you go watch the Rough Riders anthem music video right now. It's one of the hardest. Like, you're like, oh my god, like, I want to be in New York. I want to be in the streets. Turn the open the fire hydrants up. I want to be in the mix. You know, like, it just was.
You hear everybody talk about Cardi B and Nicki Minaj, Eve. They don't. People don't understand.
People don't know about Eve. It really was the golden age of hip hop. You know, and for people who aren't really familiar with, you know, '90s rap music, it was some of the most incredible lyricism and just raw shit you've ever heard. And DMX was battling drug addiction through all of his success.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear about that, like, drug addiction, because it's for example, Mac Miller, guy couldn't even function in society if he wasn't under the influence. That is crazy.
Yeah,
that's wild. It's wild.
Having a codependent relationship with drugs is, you know, looked down upon in society, but it's less looked down upon if you take a Xanax every day.
Yeah.
You know, because that's doctor prescribed, you know. I could smoke weed every day. I don't smoke weed because my job drug tests.
Same here.
So, but I like being under the influence of marijuana. I think that it calms me down. It makes me less anxious in society and being around people. I'm easy to deal. It makes it easier for me to deal with people.
Makes me sleep better.
Yeah, it makes me sleep. So many other things. Huh. But saying you're dependent on a drug is looked down upon. But that's what that is. If I go, oh, I sleep better when I'm on this, or, you know, I'm able to just function better, or my appetite's better, or anything like that.
Yeah.
You do have some kind of attachment to that drug, you know. And if you're able to function, I think people would be able to function better in society if we took away the demonization and were like, how do we make you able to function in the world and do this?
I think
people should be able to choose.
I think it's the amount that.
Absolutely. That, but I think that when you legalize something, you can regulate it and tell and study it and figure out, okay, this is how much you can take to get the edge off. Because for a lot of people dealing with drug addiction, you're just taking it not to get sick after the first couple of years. Mm. You're not like, oh, it's not. People have this idea in their brain. They're like, oh, you're choosing to be high on heroin every day instead of your family and a job. And it's like, no, that person is sick at this point. Like, they might not even get as much of a high at this point as they did in the beginning. They just need it so they don't go through withdrawals.
Yeah.
You know, which I hear are some of the most painful things you'll ever go through. Right. Yeah. Going through trying to kick a drug habit is terrible, right? So this idea that it's like you're choosing to party and have a good time over family and all these kind of things like that, and it's like, it's so much deeper than that, man. Mm. And if people took the time to really try to understand that, I think we'd be in a better place, you know. Because there's people who aren't DMX who are dealing with drug addiction. Everybody, you know, when they overdose or pass away or, you know, relapse, the whole world isn't behind them sending them hearts and love and praise.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that DMX is a very revered person.
Yeah.
But this happens to people every day, you know. And I'm not a drug expert or a toxicology expert. I'm just saying, I think that we should try to destigmatize drug addiction because it would help people, you know. Not making people feel like pieces of shit and worthless and not worthy of being saved isn't really conducive to them kicking a drug habit, learning how to function with their drug habit.
Well, help.
Or help, help. You know, anything. Yeah. You know, like, it's not conducive to anything. So yeah. Rest in peace to DMX. Let's try to work together to destigmatize drug addiction. And, yeah, man, give people their flowers while they're still here. That's all I really got to say on the DMX situation.
Yeah.
Another story I wanted to just touch on briefly was, I don't know if, did you hear about this Phillip Adams story, this former football player who shot up a whole family?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I did.
Another big, I mean, it's not official, but everybody, you know what everybody's saying is that
CTE.
It was CTE related. They're doing an autopsy on his brain. That usually takes a few weeks to get results back.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, for sure. But everybody who knows him is saying, yeah, he was the nicest guy. Like, everybody's saying, like, this is so out of character, which, somebody dies, you're going to say nice things about him. But a lot of the research that I did, people were like, yeah, no, he was a hardworking guy. You know, he was a journeyman football player. Like, he wasn't a star. I think he was still within some kind of age that he could play if he was J.J. Watt, you know. And it's like, you're 31, but you're J.J. Watt. You have something left in you.
Yeah.
He was never that great to begin with. So right. Once the age comes, you're like, that's you can't make a roster. You're not good enough to be on a roster. And that was a battle that he was facing because that's how he put food on the table for his family. Yeah. So he was going through some financial problems. But the fact that the guy that he killed, Dr. Bob Leslie, was a doctor,
yeah,
who had treated him before in the past, according to some reports, not for CTE, though, but the fact that it was a doctor and that this was so crazy, it makes people go to CTE.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about CTE briefly on this show because I feel like I've asked you, or we've had conversations about, like, if the players know what the risk is, then I'm not saying, like, hey, football shouldn't be played. But I don't feel like these players from a young age even are getting the full information about what CTE is, that it's not preventable because of what you're doing as a sport, and what the ramifications of banging your head up against the ground and the other people and everything that you do and your brain jiggling around in your skull, what that can do to your brain and the future for your life. I don't think they're being given all that information properly to make the right decision. But if they are, my mistake, because if you go, okay, yeah, but if this is the end result, or a Junior Seau, or a Chris Benoit, or, you know, so many other stories that we've heard of people who have CTE, if this can be the end result, I feel like that whole idea that I initially said at parts in this podcast of, like, well, if you know the risks, like, but you can set your family up generationally, I feel like a lot of people would take that risk.
Yeah.
But most people that play football aren't able to set their family up generationally. Most people that play football, 2 to 3 years career, you know, very short career,
for very short window,
for the average football player. Not everybody's Ezekiel Elliott
and depending on what position
that too. Like, you know, if you're a quarterback, yeah, you're probably going to get paid a good amount of money for your career. But if you're the people who are in the trenches, the linebackers and the free safeties and the people that are, yeah, and the running backs and the people that are taking the hits, they say Aaron Hernandez had the brain of like an 80-year-old man, and he was like 27. Chris Benoit's brain was insane.
Yeah.
But wrestling is nuts, you know?
How do you have a brain of an 80-year-old person, though?
Because it deteriorates your brain.
Oh, it just deteriorates.
I mean, when you, it, like, puts holes in your brain.
Yeah.
All the damage that it does, it starts to, like, rot your brain away.
So that's what an 80-year-old person's brain look like?
Yeah, well, it's slowly, you know, that's what dementia comes from, and all these, your brain is slowly withering away. So, I don't know the situation with Phillip Adams. He could have just snapped. Completely unrelated to CTE, but the odds are not. I would put money down on this being CTE related. I mean, for it to just be out of the blue, he killed Dr. Bob, his wife, two of their grandkids, shot a guy that was working on their house, and then another guy is currently fighting for his life. I don't know if he's out of critical condition yet. His name was Robert Shook. He just went to these people's home or their practice or something. And just shot them up, you know?
Yeah, seeing that story.
9 and 5, the kids were.
Was pretty much, for me, I haven't been on social media since, like, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I said I'm going to take a 2-week break, so I haven't been on social media.
Taking its toll on you?
Yeah, man, I just can't. Just people just being in the wrong place at the wrong time and just being innocently killed. It's just, I can't. It's kind of hard for me to, especially the shit that happened.
Yeah, and by your job.
It's like, I can't even. Yeah. I just can't seem to think about, because, like, now I wake up and go, you know, could I walk out? You know, it's just like you go to the store every you just go to the store every day. You
go
know,
to the
you
store
just
every day before you pandemic, you go to the like, movies often. And it's just go to festivals.
You just could be in the wrong. It's like I can't stand to see that stuff every day. So I was like, I gotta leave social media alone for a little bit. I was like, I'm just taking 2 week breaks. I haven't been on it. I've been feeling great, to be quite honest with you, because I'm not. The first thing I'm not doing is getting up and getting on my phone. And
sure.
When I get home, getting on my phone. It's just like. It's been great, though.
I get that. Yeah. It is. It's a lot. And I think we got so wrapped up in pandemic over the last year and everything being locked down and being stressed out about that, that we forgot that this shit was happening every day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Before the pandemic, it was a school shooting and a public event shooting, people shooting up video game. Remember, somebody from here, from Maryland, like went to a Madden tournament and shot up some people.
Yeah.
So this shit was happening all the time, and now it's getting nice. People getting cocky, businesses opening back up, and it's just back to business as usual. You know, as soon as stuff starts to open back up, it's like there are people who go, "Oh, cool, yeah, let me get my gun," and I'm having a bad day, or I'm, you know, demented or whatever. So I'm gonna go shoot some people up. Yeah. Now everything's open again. People are out. I'm gonna go to the FedEx and shoot some people. Or I'm gonna go to here. It's crazy that it really is. It's like clockwork.
Yeah.
Everything was shut down. There weren't as many here. You didn't hear as many things about shootings. As soon as it starts getting warm, the thing in Colorado happens. Somebody shoots up a Trader Joe's. And it's been like, ever since I heard about that one, it's been like every week there's been a thing every week.
Like, and I was like, I can't.
Like 6 weeks.
Yeah, I was like, I can't deal with it anymore. I can't do it.
But also, as we discussed many a times, there are plenty of people all across the planet dealing with mental health issues, being, you know, taking care of their mental health issues, getting on the right doses of medicine, going to therapy, all of these things that don't go and shoot people.
But that's
so
what I mean.
Something else that's going on.
That makes it even worse, though. For you to go, I have a problem, but it's your guys' fault why I have the problem.
Yeah.
So you guys, I have to kill you guys. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So even people who are, these people who, even if mental health is their issue, there are people with those same mental health issues who go and get the help.
Yeah.
So it's still on them. It's not like, oh, it's not their fault they have mental health issues. No. There's people with mental health issues who go and get the help that they need.
Yeah.
So there's something else radicalizing these people. And maybe they're thinking like, maybe it's because mental health is so stigmatized as well. Everything comes back to like toxic masculinity and hyper masculinity and being like, oh no, I'm tough, man. I don't need that shit. Therapy, I don't need to talk to anybody about my problems. Medicine, nah, I'm cool. I hear stuff in my head sometimes, but fuck, it's fine. I'm fine. And I don't need that shit. That's for weak people. I feel like that plays a part in it as well. Just society, men in society, people in society, nobody wants to admit that they have a problem. And then the problem creeps up on them and it's too late for you to do anything about it. So, you know, I always try to just say, you know, just destigmatize anything that I can as a black man in America. I always try to say like, hey, man, like therapy is cool. Experimenting with psychedelic and psychotropic drugs is cool. It allows you to deal with some things that you might be dealing with internally in a positive and peaceful way. You know, meditation is good. These are good things to do as opposed to just bottling up things and getting tight and wound up. And aside from going out and hurting people, like by killing them, this can lead to stress, which can lead to all kind of medical issues. So outside of you hurting other people, you're hurting yourself when you're not taking care of your mentals. Take care of your mentals, man, because like that can come back and affect you physically. So outside of people going out and snapping and hurting people, you're doing damage to yourself when you're not taking care of your mentals. So that's just a little, you know, little PSA from the Affirmative Murder Boys, man. Like, you know, rest in peace to everybody involved. Now, let me make sure I, you know, say their names. Rest in peace to Ada, Noah, James Lewis, Bob Leslie, Barbara Leslie, and prayers to Robert Shook, who last I checked was in critical condition in the hospital. So hopefully he's able to make a turnaround and get back out and live his life. But moving on, transitioning into some more positive things. Shout out to Laura Washington. Applause to her. We did another Patreon contest. She won it about, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes this time.
Did another one?
Yeah, man. I keep thinking I make it harder.
The same person won? Wait.
No, the same person can win. This is Laura Washington. But yeah, I mean, I keep saying, hey, you guys have it from this day. You guys have 3 days. And then 15 minutes later, people are like, I got it. Mm. So I don't know how to. I don't know. I thought I made this one pretty hard, Fran.
Yeah.
I asked them what our favorite drink was.
What's mine?
Well, our favorite drink combined is eggnog.
Oh yeah,
it's eggnog. I thought
you meant like alcoholism.
No. Yeah. Do you even have a favorite alcoholic drink? You just like stuff that tastes good.
Yeah, I like fruity stuff.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's no specific thing. Whatever, margarita, whatever gets you by. But yeah, I asked the favorite beverages question. I thought I asked some pretty hard questions. No, yeah. I asked a riddle I thought was pretty hard.
Heck no, that was easy though. You get
no, but some people got it wrong.
What did some people say? I need to hear
like iced latte. Somebody said cream soda, and I was like, I don't think I've ever even mentioned a cream soda.
Gross. I don't even like cream soda.
But like I said, congratulations to Laura Washington. She got all the answers right, you know, and within 20, 30 minutes.
Man, they be on the ball, man.
Yeah, some sound. First contest, 8 minutes.
Yeah.
This one, 20 minutes. Jeez. So at least I wanted people to have to take a day to have to go watch, listen to some podcasts, really try. I'll get them. I'll get y'all. I will get you very fine people who contribute to our Patreon. I'm very thankful. But I will get you people one of these days. It's not gonna take 20 minutes next time. But, you know, let's go ahead and just transition into the celebrations because we're talking about Patreon anyway. Let's go ahead and kick this off. That's right. Shout out to everybody who's joined the Patreon. We will continue. As I've already stated, in the month of April, if you join the Patreon, you get a free sticker. If you're already on the Patreon and you want a free sticker, hit us up in the DMs. I will happily send you a sticker, man. You know, thank you for the support. We're going to kick things off first with a shout out to Dana M. Dana ain't a better person around than Dana. Shout out to Dana. Up, Jesus. Up next we got Benazir. I've been a fan of yours for a long time, Benazir. I hope you've been a fan of ours as well. That was bad. Yeah. Up next we got Jill and not Jack and Jill.
Oh, that's it, Jill?
It's just Jill. Okay. She dropped Jack. And she just won't go up the hill to fetch a pail of water. She won't do it. Up next we got Tish the Dish. I don't even need to do anything with that. It's already there. T to the D. Shout out to you.
On purpose.
Yeah, yeah. She gave herself Tish. Yeah. She is the dish. T the D. Shout out to you. Much love and appreciation. Thanks for joining the Patreon. Tish the Dish. And lastly, we got Tiara. That's what she deserves. Boom, right on the head. Bling, a tiara, because she's a princess. Maybe, I don't know. Shout out to you, Tiara. Much love and appreciation. Shout out to y'all, everybody that I just mentioned. Shout out to everybody. I don't really, Fran, I'm just not good at this game, man. Which I'm fine with. Everybody's not going to have, this isn't Flavor of Love. Everybody's going to get some awesome nickname. Deal with it. Everybody can't be Boots with a Z.
Yeah.
Get over yourself. I'm not good at the game. Let it go.
Maybe it's what I style.
I'm sorry, that was my bad. I came in a little hot. That was my bad. Yeah, sorry about that. Thanks to everybody on the Patreon. Shout out to you guys. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Chickens, Diet Coke, reality TV, and murder don't seem like things that should go together, but somehow they do. If you're looking for your next binge-worthy podcast and you like your true crime light on the gore, then you should check out our show, Moms and Murder, a true crime podcast hosted by myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa.
Each week, we give our take on a new crime story, balancing our delivery of facts and levity while still giving the stories the respect they deserve and making you feel like you're a part of the conversation. And there are over 100 episodes to binge. Search Moms and Murder on your favorite podcast app and subscribe so you never miss a new episode.
All right, we are back. Fran, it is my turn to go first this week.
All right.
By multiple requests, my affirmative murder this week is the story of Patrick Dennehy and Carlton Dotson. And
multiple requests?
Multiple requests from people. Well, because it was the biggest scandal in Baylor's history, to my knowledge anyway, and Baylor just won the national championship. So people, it kind of re-sparked an interest in people to be like, hey, I'd love to hear about this story that happened at Baylor a few years back. So by a couple of requests, I said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and dig into that. And it's pretty interesting. I never heard of it. So Patrick Dennehy was born in Santa Clara, California in 1982 and grew up loving basketball. He transferred to Baylor University from the University of New Mexico following his 2001-2002 sophomore season. After redshirting the 2002-2003 season, Dennehy was preparing to play basketball for the Baylor Bears men's basketball team in the upcoming 2003-2004 season. Carlton Dotson was a junior power forward on the Baylor team, who was a friend of Dennehy's, attended North Dorchester High School in Hurlock, Maryland, and Parrish Junior College before transferring to Baylor in the summer of 2002. In the summer of 2003, Dennehy and Dotson indicated that they were concerned about their safety. They had purchased two pistols and a rifle, practicing firing them at a farm north of Waco, Texas, where Baylor University is located.
Wait, what? Safety for what?
Safety from, they had got some threats from some players on the team, which I'll get to, but they just weren't feeling safe, so they strapped up and started practicing firing at a farm, like to practice their aim in case they had to use these weapons that they bought to protect themselves. No, like at targets and stuff, just because like
out cans, in the middle, cans,
yeah, you know, but you're
shit.
Out in the middle of nowhere on a farm, so you don't have to worry about hitting something. Yeah, that, you know, shoot some bales of hay. On January 14th, Patrick Dennehy told friend Daniel Acapagni that he was worried about about threats made to Dotson by two fellow teammates. Dennehy also indicated that he and Dotson would be at a party the following day at which neither of them showed up. After both men failed to attend this party, there were indications that something had gone wrong. Dennehy's mother and stepfather, Valerie and Brian Barbizon, were concerned that they had received no calls on Father's Day, and Dennehy's roommate returned home from a vacation to find that his dog had not been fed. On June 19th, the Barbizons filed a report with Waco Police Department that Dennehy was missing. On January 25th, Dennehy's car was found in Virginia Beach, Virginia, with its license plates removed.
Now, and where are they from?
They were playing football. They were playing basketball at Waco, at Baylor in Waco, Texas. So that is across the country.
Yeah.
That part I wasn't able to find more details on. It's very strange. That's crazy. But he had been missing for over a week at this point. So I guess it's possible that him or somebody drove his car to Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Just him.
What do you mean?
I thought it was another guy.
Oh, yeah.
Dotson or something?
Dotson. Yeah, Dotson. So Dotson hasn't been indicated in anything so far in my story. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
But he wasn't missing, though.
Carlton Dotson was not missing.
Gotcha. No. Okay.
An affidavit filed on June 23rd, so he was reported missing on June 25th.
Mm-hmm.
An affidavit filed on June 23rd, which was unsealed on June 30th, seeking a search warrant for Dennehy's computer, says that an informant in Delaware told police that Dotson, who by now was at home in Maryland, told a cousin that he had shot and killed Dennehy during an argument while firing guns in the Waco area.
Wait, what? But it was cool.
Maybe they were cool according to Dotson.
So he went home.
He went home, but he went home to Maryland, which is pretty fucking close to Virginia.
Yeah, which is on
so
the way.
So the last time Dennehy and Dotson were seen together was in Waco, Texas. And then now he ends up popped up back in Maryland.
Yeah.
And Dennehy's car is in Virginia Beach. Mm. So, yeah. On July 21st, Dotson was charged with Dennehy's murder and taken into custody in Maryland. The search for Dennehy continued until July 25th, when a badly decomposed body was found in a gravel pit near Waco and was taken to Dallas for an autopsy. On July 30th, his death was ruled a homicide, and on August 7th, a memorial service was held for Dennehy in San Jose, California. Following a stint in which Dotson's competency to stand trial was in question, he ended up pleading guilty to the murder on June 8th, 2005, and was sentenced a week later to 35 years in prison. Dotson is currently an inmate at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and will be eligible for parole after he has served about half of his sentence. Here's how the story became a bigger scandal for Baylor, though. So in early August 2003, allegations arose concerning Dennehy's ability to remain with Baylor basketball team during the 2002-2003 academic year without an athletic scholarship. Allegations of impropriety within Baylor's athletic department surfaced, and University President Robert B. Sloan appointed an investigative panel to determine if there were any potential violations of National College Athletics Association rules at the school.
I got a question. So the threats that he was getting, that had nothing to do. It was just...
They were receiving threats. I don't have much details on that. It does come back up again. So the threats were real. But they got into an argument, and then they had guns. So, you know, sometimes when you get in an argument, you feel a little bit more emboldened when you got a gun in your hand.
Yeah.
You know, as we've discussed before. But they got in an argument, there were guns around, and ended in Dennehy being shot. But here's where, like, as I just mentioned, there were some concerns that Dennehy's ability to remain at Baylor was in question because they had ran out of scholarships, and yet he was able to still be on the team. Hmm. So so basically this death spotlight put a spotlight on Baylor and rose a lot of questions because they're like, well, Dennehy doesn't seem like he was supposed to even be there at the school because you guys were out of scholarships. So then they did some more digging, and then I'll get into what the digging turned up. They discovered that having reached the limits on team scholarships, Baylor head coach Dave Bliss secretly paid Dennehy's tuition and that of a fellow teammate named Corey Herring. Herring and his family had no knowledge of this. He was under, according to him, he was under the impression that he was on scholarship. And I also want to say I'm 90% confident that this is just every school is doing this. They go, we're out of scholarships, but we want this guy. Just tell him he's on scholarship and just pay his tuition.
Yeah.
That kid's a star. Give him A's in all his classes.
It's still a full ride. It's still the same thing, ain't it?
What do you mean?
Scholarship.
But it's illegal. There's rules.
It's illegal, but I'm just saying for him, it's like...
It's a full ride. Still, his school is being paid for, but it's supposed to be being paid for by a scholarship, not... You're not supposed to pay students to come to your school, at least under the rules. You should. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's my point.
Yeah.
Is that you should... I think you should pay students, but you're not... Under the rules, you're not allowed to, so... To pay for somebody's school to education is paying them money, you know. So
it's been a damn good player.
Oh, that kid. I mean, I guess so. Yeah, he must have been. You know, if they paid.
If the coach take a risk like that.
Yeah, for sure. But my point is, it's not a risk unless a kid gets murdered at your school and then there's a spotlight. Oh, I feel like this happens at Duke, and I feel like this is just everybody does this.
They wouldn't have found out if it did.
If there wasn't such a big event that happened and it put a spotlight on them, and then they're like, "Oh, we did actually find some stuff in our investigation, so you got to get thrown under the bus." Like I said, he was paying for the tuition of Patrick Dennehy and another student named Corey Herring. During the investigation, Bliss publicly claimed that Dennehy paid his tuition by being a drug dealer, which is super gross because basically he was guilty. But in order to try to save his own ass, he went super racist and was like, this kid who's in school trying to play basketball, trying to better his life. I didn't pay for his school. He paid for his school by being a drug dealer on the side. Yeah, that was like his go-to.
Oh, he lied.
To expunge his record. He goes, no, that guy is a drug dealer. I didn't pay anything. But he did. Yeah. So he lied, and his immediate instinct was to go to something that he thought people would just buy immediately. Look at him. He's a drug dealer. I didn't do that, you know? So that's where it goes from like, oh, this happens all the time and everybody does this. But then when you gotta try to save your ass, how weaselly are you willing to get? And Dave Bliss got pretty fucking weaselly.
Yeah.
He alleged that the dead Patrick Dennehy was a drug dealer and paid for his tuition with drug money.
Yep. That's fucked up, man. You do all that and then they go, I gotta get out of this some way.
Yeah,
just to go like, nah, he's a drug dealer. He paid for that. I don't know what you're talking about.
He probably died because of a drug deal, and then you're like, whoa,
that is so dirty.
Yeah, very, very much so. Oh, and it gets dirtier. He continues to roll around in that dirt. So like I said, he alleged that he paid for his schooling by selling drugs, and Bliss was soon under investigation by the university and the NCAA. Additionally, within weeks preceding his resignation, Bliss flew to New York City. This is crazy. Bliss flew to New York City without the knowledge of anyone, including his wife, in an attempt to convince Herring's mother, the other boy who he was paying for his tuition, Corey Herring, to convince Corey Herring's mother to lie about paying the $18,641 for his tuition.
Was he going to pay her again?
No. I don't know if money was put on the table, but I think at the very least, he was like, just say you paid for it. Because I don't think he came with money. He probably was like, I already paid for it.
Yeah.
I gave you basically 18. I sent your kid to school.
Yeah. And she lives in the projects or something.
Yeah. So he's like, just accept this and just lie. Lie under oath for me.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like I live in why would they believe that?
Yeah. You know, I just,
I live in a one bedroom apartment.
I live in the P's, bro. Yeah. I don't have 18,000. You think they're just going to believe that I scrounged together 18,000?
Right.
You don't think they're going to fucking get the IRS on me? To look
FBI
at my record,
get all involved and whatnot.
Fuck that, and fuck you.
Yeah,
get the fuck out of my house. Later, Bliss even pretended to be Herring's father. David Bliss is a 60.
He did what?
I have to assume it was on the phone. It had to be on the phone. David Bliss is the whitest. He looks like Tim the Tool Man Taylor's neighbor, the guy that it's just his nose and his forehead. And, yeah, the guy, he looks like the rest of that.
Yeah,
he looks like that guy. And Corey Haring is black. A black collegiate athlete.
Yeah,
and he's like, hey,
from the inner city.
That's why I have to assume it. That's why I have to assume it was over the phone.
Had to be through.
Where he's like, yeah, hello, what up? I'm Corey Haring's pops here, and the homie. He called to get some information. Like, are you guys doing any investigations on Corey and how he paid for his school? And they found out it was him. So, like, they were like, Dave, never that, homie. You know I keep it G always. Oh, I gotta go. The there's ribs in the oven. Bye. That always, whenever I do my white guy voice, always makes me think of Chappelle's show when he was Tron, and he was on the phone, and he was like,
I can see coming at 12.
Yeah, I'll be there somewhere between 12 and 3:30. Yeah, sure, that's no problem, Tron. See you when you get here. Okay, now, one love.
I love you too.
Okay, back to the story. Okay. So like I said, he pretended to be his dad, and he attempted to get evidence that from the school on whether or not the NCAA was investigating him. And when he called Baylor's financial aid office, he called pretending to be Corey Haring's father to check on payments made to Haring's account. So he's basically obstructing justice and interfering in an investigation and pretending to be somebody. He was like stealing somebody's identity in the investigation.
So he was calling.
He was calling around being like, hey, how you doing? I'm Corey Haring's father. Yeah. I was just calling to see if you guys were investigating that guy, Dave Bliss, his coach, because I heard there's something going on at the school. And yeah. I just wanted to see how this affects my son. And then he called the financial aid department like, hey, I'm Corey Haring's father. I'm just calling to see about some payments made to his account and see if you guys still have a record of that. It's the feds, bro.
Yeah, a little investigating.
They traced it back to it being him. So after a litany of rule violation allegations, Dave Bliss stated, we have followed the rules, however difficult they may be, for 30 years. And I also want to say once again, I am 90% sure that whatever Dave Bliss has been accused of doing, no matter how weaselly he ended up trying to get out of it, every school is currently doing all of this.
Yeah.
The NCAA is a corrupt organization built on exploitation of labor. And when you build a system like that, they find ways and rabbit holes and loopholes to fuck people. And they fuck people every day because that's the system that's being built. Why are these students not being paid any money? And the NCAA is a billion-dollar industry built on the backs of children playing basketball and football and all these sports for free.
Yeah.
Why is it that that's the institution? So when they go, well, you can't pay for a kid's food. You can't give him money to buy food. His payment is his education, but he can't eat. There are kids going to school, five-star recruits, who don't have money on their card to get lunch because there's a whole community of people who would be like, you fucking play for you play for Duke basketball. Yeah. You can eat here for free. Yeah. No, you can't do that, man. Sorry. I'll get in trouble. You know?
They don't even do 4 years anyway.
Exactly.
They do one.
So you don't even get that. You don't
6 months or whatever it is.
Most players don't get the education anyway because they're trying to go to the league.
That's why that documentary of Ben Simmons, I loved it. I don't know if you saw that documentary when he was just like, it was a documentary of him saying like, I don't want to be here.
For the one.
I'm here to play basketball.
Yeah.
Y'all want me to go to class? I'm not going to class.
I don't want to be here.
I'm going here to go into the NBA. Yes,
we all
to
know
make some money.
Everybody knows the hustle.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get a communications degree.
Yeah.
Why are you making me go to English 1?
Yeah. He was like, I don't want to be here.
I have to do.
And y'all know I don't want
to
be here.
I'd have to do 2-a-days. I have to eat 6,000 calories a day to stay the weight that I am. You think I have time to try to learn about Shakespeare?
It's crazy.
But that's why I'm a proponent of the NBA opening up this G League thing.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But you know who's not fine with that? The NCAA.
Yeah.
Because it's $1 billion industry.
The coaches are making millions.
Millions of dollars.
That's
wild. And the coaches are making millions of dollars. And the coaches, you know what they can do? They just changed the rule this year. But a coach can go, you know what? I don't really want to coach at Baylor anymore. I'm going to go to Gonzaga. And they can just do that.
Just leave?
But a kid has to sit out a year. and lose a year of tape, lose a year of potentially, you know, boosting their draft ability.
Yeah.
If they want to go to a different school, if they don't get any minutes at that school, whatever, X, Y, and Z, they have to sit a year. But a coach can just go, I quit. I'm going to go work here now. That's the whole thing. It's a whole complicated thing, because one thing I will say is, like, a Zion Williamson when he was in college. Like, yeah, if you're going to pay students, you got to pay Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
Do you have to pay the third string shooting guard?
No.
You know, yeah, you know, like, so that's going to be a whole different fight. Cause it's like,
does it though?
You know who puts the butts in the seats.
Yeah.
But how do you get a team to play for you when it's clearly favoritism? Yeah. You know. True. So it's a difficult conversation. Yeah. So I don't know how to bridge you cross it. But what is clear is that the system's built on exploitation of free labor. That's just a fact.
That's true.
Now, how do you pay people? I don't know. Cause you can't justify. You pay Jalen Suggs whatever he wants. He's the biggest, highest recruited kid to go to Gonzaga ever.
Yeah.
Do you pay the third guy from the bottom what you pay Jalen Suggs? Absolutely not. He probably won't even play in any major games. But
NBA do it.
Yeah, but everybody's getting paid in the NBA. If Jalen Suggs is getting paid and everybody else is not getting paid, how do you go, yeah, let's all, everybody, one hand in the, get everybody hands up, team on three.
Yeah.
And he leaves off in a Range Rover.
I mean, you
and
pay
you're
them
hungry.
Too. I mean, you pay them too, though.
But not as much as you pay Jalen Suggs.
Yeah.
Well, how do you convince, how do you
let them get endorsements.
Or that too. I'm actually going to move on because that's a good point you bring up. Yeah. Let them be able to go out and go, hey, Arby's, like local commercials, and they can make a couple racks here and there.
Yeah.
But you can go like, hey, come to this dealership, and they get a quick 500 here, 500 there. Yeah. Allow them to. I agree. On the day after Dennehy's memorial service, Bliss met with Baylor's investigators and was told that Dennehy's girlfriend had accused him of paying a portion of Dennehy and Herring's tuition not covered by the financial aid. Both payments violated the NCAA rules, and Bliss confessed to making the payments, which totaled $7,000. This, combined with the violations of Baylor's drug test policy, because basically they were saying there were parents complaining about drug use and that it wasn't being reported because the stars of the teams are smoking weed in the dorms. Okay, guys, hey, you have a meeting. And this is what I say. All the schools do this.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, hey, listen. On Tuesday, 3 months from now, we're drug testing for weed.
Yeah.
So be clean on that day.
Yep.
All right, guys, let's go. You know, it's little subtle ways to do it. They're not saying like, hey, guys, smoke weed all you want. But they'll go, hey, the drug test is this day. Be clean. And I tell you like this. If you're Zion Williamson, his test is going to be clean. I promise you that. Zion Williamson in Duke is not missing a game or missing 10 games because he smoked weed.
Yeah, they're not letting it out there.
His piss will be nice and clean. Somebody's piss will be nice and clean in that cup.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that goes on. But a kid was murdered tragically at this school, so Dave Bliss got a spotlight put on him. And all the stuff that all these other schools definitely do, he got exposed for, and he went out looking like a weasel and tried to weasel around, catch flights, go to tell people to lie for him, and, you know, all this stuff. So, which, you know, you're making a 7-figure job. You've been working there all your life. I guess you'll do what you kind of do to protect your family and your livelihood and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but blaming a kid who got murdered and calling him a drug dealer, you know, posthumously is super low and pretty fucking gross.
Yeah.
So like I said, all this combination of drug violations and being accused of the payments and everything, all of these things led for Baylor to forcefully make Dave Bliss resign on August 8th of 2003. On August 16th, the Star-Telegram reported that Dave Bliss had told players to lie to investigators by indicating that Dennehy had paid for his tuition by dealing drugs. So he had a team meeting and told all the players, hey, if you talk to any reporters or any investigators, tell them that Patrick was a drug dealer.
I wonder what that kid was like. Oh, I haven't been getting any minutes.
Yeah. A coach is supposed to mold people. And if your coach is telling you, hey, you know your teammate that died? Spit on his name. And because I told you to, and lie, and somebody just died, and it's so toxic. Like it just goes to show you that collegiate sports, in a lot of ways, has gone so far from the idea of sports being to just better your mental and make you a better person. It's just like, how do we make money and win games? That's what college sports is about. It's not like, because if that was the case, anybody would be able to make the college basketball team.
Yeah, but imagine if the guy was following them rules, and he went, yeah, man, we don't have any
Yeah, you're out of. Oh, Patrick Dennehy would be still alive, and he would go to another.
He went
school.
To the college.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He would have been just fine.
We wouldn't even be doing the story.
Yeah, he would have been just fine.
That's crazy.
So because he bent the rules the way that he did, he kept Patrick Dennehy in an unsafe situation.
Should fall all on him
when they made reports that he was feeling unsafe. Him and Carlos, even though Carlos ended up shooting him. I mean Carlton. Jesus, Carlton ended up shooting him. They made reports that like we were getting threats from the team. So he was in an unsafe environment.
Yep.
And then he was basically made to stay there under false pretenses because from what I know, he was made to believe that his tuition was that he was on scholarship, even though he wasn't. Like you said, if he wasn't breaking the rules, Patrick Dennehy would have gone to another school and we wouldn't even be talking about this right now. So his obstruction of the rules in a big way, in more of a way than not at all, is a cause to why Patrick Dennehy is not alive.
Yeah.
Because he would have just had to go to another school because you guys didn't have any more scholarships. So like I said, he told the whole team to like insinuate that Patrick Dennehy was dealing drugs. These conversations were taped on microcassette by his assistant coach, Abar Roos, from July 30th to August 1st. On the tapes, Bliss was heard instructing players to fabricate the story of Dennehy being a drug dealer to Baylor investigators and also said that talking to the McLennan County Sheriff's Department would give him the opportunity to practice his story. This is what he's telling to the team. The tapes also showed that Bliss and his staff knew that Dennehy had been threatened by two other teammates when they publicly denied such knowledge. So out in public, they said, I haven't heard anything about threats or anything like that. But they knew that that was the case.
Yeah.
And they denied it because he shouldn't have been there. He wasn't supposed to be there because they were out of scholarships. So you got to go, oh, yeah, I have no reason to think that he didn't feel safe here or something like that. You know, he's welcome here.
Yeah.
So you're already trying to cover your ass, but the whole thread's starting to unravel. He was fucked from the beginning. They were going to find out all this shit at some point. So he was just delaying the inevitable. So his assistant coach, like I said, Rouse, he taped the conversations after Bliss threatened to fire him if he did not go along with the scheme. The revelation shocked Baylor and the college basketball community, which I'm sure they shocked them, but not because of the rule breaking. This is just a crazy story in general. They were like, oh, we did that too. Let's be a little more secretive about our shit.
Right.
However, despite the potential allegations of extortion, obstruction of justice, and witness tampering, no criminal charges were filed against Bliss.
What?
The scandal left Baylor's basketball program in ruins. Lawrence Roberts, John Lucas III, Kenny Taylor, and Tyrone Nelson transferred to other schools. Two of the four became immediate stars at programs that would win regular season conference titles in 2004. Mm. Roberts became the main inside force at Mississippi State, leading their team in scoring and rebounding and being selected as a first-team All-American, while Lucas stayed in the conference at Oklahoma State, becoming their second leading scorer and assist leader while helping the team reach the Final Four. Taylor transferred to the University of Texas at Austin, and Nelson enrolled at Prairie View A&M University. A year later, Corey Herring, transferred to Canisius College. I'm not familiar with that school.
That's the second one.
That's the other guy that he was paying for his tuition. Rouse sued his attorney in 2005 for releasing the incriminating tapes of Bliss, claiming that it breached the attorney-client privilege. Rouse's attorney claimed that she did no such thing and she didn't know how the tapes got transcribed, but the journalist who published the statements and the tapes said that he got them from her, his lawyer. And the reason he did that, because check this is trippy. And there's also some parallels to like the blue wall of silence in a way, not really, but I just see parallels in this stuff. So after Baylor, Rouse, the assistant coach, he had a job as a graduate assistant coach at Midwestern State University in Wichita Falls, Texas. He left that position in October 2007 and has not had another job in basketball since. He has said that he has. No, I'm talking about the assistant coach.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah, he has said that he feels like he's been effectively blackballed from the collegiate ranks for taping Bliss's statements. Despite the near universal revulsion of Bliss's actions, many leading members of the college basketball coaching fraternity consider Rouse's recording a serious breach of trust. And that is the story of the murder of Patrick Dennehy and how it exposed a major scandal at Baylor University and, you know, in my opinion, the NCAA as a whole.
So they essentially call him a snitch.
Yes.
That's crazy.
For exposing mad illegalities.
Wow.
And so basically, that's, you know, some up. Coaches off the record were like, yeah, what Bliss did was fucked up, but I would never have a guy that would record me on my coaching staff. I would never have that be my assistant coach if he would take me. Nah.
Wow.
So he never got a job again. And his testimony is what exposed this whole thing. But it wasn't a good thing to the coaching, to the college community.
And he didn't sue? He did sue.
He sued his lawyer, but like, who else can you sue?
Can't sue NCAA?
For what? Not getting a job?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could, but like, how do you prove that it's because of what happened to Baylor? But he also might, I don't know his how good he was of a, I don't know. But it makes sense to me. Never got a job again after this big scandal. They're like, I don't want to touch it. I don't want anybody involved in it to be on my coaching staff. Also, you recorded your coach.
That's fucked
up. What if you want my job and you try to be, and also think about it. Like I said, I think all these coaches are doing this shit. So you might go, you might try to, you know, record me. You might be stacking evidence to get me to try to take my job. Snake. Yeah, that was the story of the Baylor scandal and the death of Patrick Dennehy committed by Carlton Dotson. Rest in peace to him. And yeah, man, I don't know. Pay the players. I don't know how. Figure it out. Let them make money. I don't know. Figure it out, man. It's not right. It is exploiting labor. It is a form of exploitation that is absolutely disgusting. The way they work these kids, and I understand these kids are trying to follow a dream, but if you look at the statistics, there are 400 NBA spots. Most kids playing college right now are not going to the pros.
Yeah.
And they're tearing their ACLs, they're fracturing their bones, they're putting their bodies on the line for a dream that is most likely to not come true. So again, rest in peace to Patrick Dennehy, man. Thank you to the people who asked for this, because I don't know who is listening to this who maybe didn't find this that entertaining, but I did. I like sports related crime stories because they kind of combine two things that I'm very interested in.
I thought it was a great story.
So this is one that I really enjoyed learning about, and I haven't even heard of this. So when they were like, "Can you do the Patrick Dennehy story?" I was like, "I don't know who that is, but I'll look into it," you know. So thank you for the recommendation, and what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's Fran's turn to tell you some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day. P at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by The Social High Five. During 2020, we all had to adapt to some very unexpected conditions. It was no different for us sports fans. We're all anxiously looking forward to the time that we can reopen sports bars and stadiums, but COVID, flu, and other health risks are still very real. Now, though, there's an awesome new way for fans to cheer on their team and still keep their hands germ-free. With the Social High Five. Made from a sturdy, light, and easy-to-clean styrene, the Social High Five straps to your hand with ease and allows for a hygienic hand slap after your team scores a big goal, makes a massive play, and hopefully wins the big game. The company actually sent Fran and I a couple of social high fives, and while I believe podcasting is a sport, Fran has asked me to stop using mine to slap his butt because, quote, "This is not basketball, man. We're talking into microphones," end quote. Give the sports fanatic in your life a helping hand with the social high five. Just go to social HIGH5.com and order one today. I think this will be a fantastic product for sports bars or even sporting organizations to just have ready for when fans come back, when patrons come back into their businesses to say, hey, we're still following the guidelines. We still want people to be safe, but it's okay to celebrate and cheer when your team does something awesome. So again, go to socialhigh5.com and get you one today and tell them Affirmative Murder sent you. All right, back to the show.
All right, welcome back. My story, my Affirmative Murder this week is about the disappearance of Jason Sims Jr.
Oh.
This is one of the most...
Never heard.
It's not a lot of information I found in this case.
Okay.
But the little bit of information I did get, this is a super odd and bizarre story.
I'm all ears.
So here we go. So Jason Sims Jr. Was missing since January the 1st of 2015 from Fairfield, Alabama. He's an African American kid. He was born, April?
Yes.
April 24th, 1999. So when he was missing, he was supposed to be 15 years old.
You said he was born when? 1992?
1999.
He was born in 1999?
1999.
In 2015, he went missing. Got it.
15, so now he would have been 21 years old.
If. Like now as in today?
Now as in today, he would have been 21 years old. Yeah. The only pictures they have of him is when he was a kid, and they use that technology, you know, how he would look right now today.
Okay.
They were saying that Jason is autistic and nonverbal, so he was an African-American male with black hair and brown eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, authorities with Alabama Department of Human Resources began investigating Jason's parents, Natasha Wright and Jason Sims Sr., for child neglect in October of 2014. They lived in 100 block of 59th Street in Fairfield, Alabama. The DHR, which is the
Department of Human Resources,
was aware of two children living in the home at the time.
Okay.
A 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. They didn't know anything about Jason or his 9-year-old sibling.
So there was four kids?
There was four kids, but nobody knew about the other two.
Got it.
Who was Jason and his other.
Okay.
No, like nobody
saw them or had any.
How do you have two kids? You have four kids, but two of them, nobody even knew you had these two children.
Probably for some pretty dark reasons.
Some crazy shit. Neither of them had ever been enrolled in school or been to a doctor's recently. So there is no any way that somebody can keep up with these other two or even knew they even existed.
Yeah.
Based on the conditions at the home, police issued arrest warrants for Wright and Jason Sr. So they said in a couple of videos, I saw one of the videos said that when they went to go check the home, they had to like go in and like hazmat suits because it was just that bad in there. Mm. So they were saying that they issued arrest warrants for Wright and Jason Sr., charging them with aiding the dependency of minors. They tried to arrest the couple in October, but the family had moved. They went on a run, didn't pack anything in the house. They just left the house as it is, and they just got out of there.
Yeah.
They had photographs of Wright and Jason Sr. That are posted with the case summary. On January 23rd, 2015, Wright was found unconscious, or Wright is the mom, was found unconscious at the 59th Street residence. So they, at some point, went back to the home.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't say why she was unconscious at the house. I didn't see anything about that.
Okay.
So she was taken to the hospital. When she awoke, she asked, where is Jason?
Sure.
Right?
Jason Jr.
It was then that authorities learned that Jason Sims Jr. and his 9-year-old sibling, that's when they found out about those two. Neither of the children had ever been, like I said, had ever been enrolled and went to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The other children were tracked down and found to be in the care of relatives, but Jason Jr. was not there.
So she's asking for her son. This is after they had already, they have warrants out for themselves. They ran from town.
Yeah.
And then she just popped up back in the house that they used to live in.
Unconscious.
Asking for the son that nobody knew existed.
Yes.
So then they start looking and they go and they find the kids that they know about.
Yeah.
But there is no Jason with those kids.
There is no Jason.
Got it. Okay.
So the other children were tracked down and found to be in the care of relatives, but Jason Jr. was not there. And his father has refused to give any information as to his whereabouts, and searches have so far came up empty. So Jason Sr. is still out on the run. Okay. He's not giving, he hasn't given any hints of where
but
he's
But by
at,
giving any hints, they just mean they haven't found him.
They just haven't found him. I mean, like, Jason Senior. Senior.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, they just don't.
Well, when they said, like, when it says, like, they have he hasn't given any hints, it implies that, like, he's arrested or they asked him and he won't say anything. But they can't, they don't know where he is.
Yeah, they don't know where he's at. So, like I said, when she regained consciousness, she asked where her son was. So they searched the 59th home, the 59th Street home, turned up no signs of him. And Jason Senior has refused to, again, has refused to provide any information to his whereabouts. Later in 2015, Wright, which is the mom, filed for a protection from abuse order against her husband. In April 2016, Jason Senior was charged with failure to report a child missing, which is a felony. So they didn't report Jason
was missing.
Jason Jr. was missing. Mm-hmm. So he was saying that he maintained that he had no responsibility to report Jason missing because although the boy has the same name as him, he said Jason is not his biological son and Jason Sr. is not listed as his father on the birth certificate.
Wait, so they must go in to catch him eventually, right?
Yeah, he turns himself in.
Okay, got it. Okay, because I'm like, how are they getting these updates? Yeah, so, okay, got it.
So the charges against Jason Senior and Wright are aiding of the pendency of minors, which have been has been dismissed. In November 2019, Jason Senior pleaded guilty to the misdemeanor. So this is what it's like 3-4 years later, after the whole thing.
But he still hasn't given any details or said where the kid is.
Well, I'm gonna get to
that. Okay, sorry.
So yeah, he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor, which was this was a some type of plea. That
sure.
He had, like
for the like not reporting a kid missing or something like that.
So it was part of a plea bargain. The charge was reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor. He was sentenced to 12 months in jail. 12 months in jail and 2 years of probation. Yep, 2019. Jason Senior still states that Jason is not his son and he doesn't know the child.
Jason Sims Jr.
He does, yeah. So he's saying that that's not my son. I don't know where he is. And also saying, like, I kind of really don't care. You know, I'm just trying to
move on with my life.
Yeah. So
is he's out on probation or something? Or yeah, he will be soon if he's
not. Yeah. So his defense attorney has gone so far as to suggest that Jason has never really actually existed.
Oh, wow. Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
So that's, oh, wow. Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry. So, just a couple of things that I've read articles that the only thing they have is Jason Jr., pictures of him as a kid.
Wait, so what about the other? You said there was like he had a little brother.
Yeah, they end up finding
that little brother.
He does exist.
Okay, got it. Okay.
There's no information, probably because he's a minor. So they probably, there's no information.
Got it.
But the only thing they have is pictures of him as a kid. Only thing they have is the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
But Jason seems like that's not my child.
So there is a birth certificate for Jason Sims Jr.
But that's all they have. So.
But but that's a record of a person existing.
Yeah.
When you said that fucked me up. Because I'm like, okay, so Miss Wright, whatever her first name is, could have just made this whole thing up.
Yeah. So they do have a birth certificate of him. But that's all they have. He never went to, and they say he was autistic, nonverbal.
Yeah.
You know.
A kid like this would have popped up unless he was murdered and disposed of. I feel like you'd find this kid in distress. Like if he just was left somewhere,
but he can't speak.
Yeah, but that would be like if somebody saw a kid walking down the road, standing out, not talking to anybody, they pull over and they go, are you okay? And then he might have some kind of like autistic freak out or something.
Yeah.
And then he would be brought into Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that's less likely of a scenario if he's killed and disposed of, as opposed to like he ran away. Or they took him out somewhere and dropped, like they abandoned him.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'll just give my, what I think would happen at the end.
Okay.
So the circumstances of Jason's disappearance are unclear, and authorities can find no medical records and no recent pictures of the child, and little to go on as what his current whereabouts are. So local law enforcement stated that his disappearance is one of the most bizarre situations they've encountered. So one of the agents that was working on the case said, I have never seen anything like it. His name is David, said in an early interview. It's one of those made-for-TV kind of things where people make up the strangest things they can and write a story about it. So again, like an investigator was like, this is the most crazy shit I've ever seen. And this is made up. Like somebody, this shit is fake.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
So wait, I just have one because it's fucking me up. Okay, so the lawyer asserted in some either subtle or not so subtle way that this kid might not even exist.
Yeah.
But David Sims Sr. and Wright, whatever her first name is, sorry, I don't know, I forgot it. Mm-hmm. They lived together and had kids in their home.
Had kids in their home.
So David Sims Sr. knows whether or not there's a David Sims Jr. Is real or not.
He's saying, I don't even know what, he's basically saying, I don't know what she's talking about.
That's crazy. Because if he's, it's one thing if your lawyer,
but it's
goes,
like nobody,
because your lawyer's saying like, I don't know, maybe he doesn't even exist. That's you being a lawyer.
Yeah.
But if David Sims Sr. is saying, oh, there was never a David Sims Jr. in the house. That's crazy.
That is what, but and nobody knows of the except her. And he's like,
but like, and him, he should know too.
But he's like that. I don't. But he's saying, I don't know what she's talking about.
That's crazy.
But he has my name, but I'm not his father. And I don't know where he is.
Wait,
if he does exist.
But you said they did the forwarding. So they do have a photo of him.
It's a photo of him. When he was a child. Yes.
It's just fucking me.
It's wild.
So he exists.
That's what I think. But I want to tell you what I think what happens okay. after.
Sorry, because it's just
fucking It's just wild. Yes. But James is like, I don't know what she's talking about. But it's like, bro, what? He was also ordered to have no contact with the victim's family, which is right. Sims told AL.com he pleaded guilty so that... This shit is wild. He pleaded guilty so that he could get on with his life after facing charges for so many years. He said, quote, it's been hard for me to maintain a job. It comes to a point you have to move on. Imagine. He's like, this shit is hanging over my head. I can't get a job. I need to...
But I was going to say, like, I know a lot of bail bondsmen who that is what they prey on is somebody in a position where it's like somebody could be guilty and have the money to make bond and be innocent. And I just can't get out of here to fight my case, not in jail. So now I'm in here. I'm innocent. I lose my job.
Yeah.
Cause I can't come to work. I can't show up to work on time. So I could understand this guy being like, man, I got to keep coming to court and I got this shit hanging over my head.
Yeah.
Just offer me whatever you're offering me.
Yeah,
I'll plead out just to get it, you know, because it is like you pleaded guilty to endangering children and shit. It's like, man, it was way worse.
Yeah.
And I've been dealing with this shit for 2-3 years and I can't hold a job. I can't leave the state. Just give me something so I can move on.
Yeah.
So I get that in a way.
Yeah.
But this shit is still crazy. This shit is nuts.
Yeah. So he said that he has no idea where Jason Jr. is or what happened to him. He claims that he's not Jason's biological father. He said, he's not mine, and I've always known that. So again, he's maintained that he has no responsibility to report. He had no responsibility to report sure. Jason missing.
Because it's not his responsibility.
Right.
That's cold as shit.
Even though he has your name. And
they live together.
He's not listed as the father on his birth certificate. Yep.
He's not?
He's not listed as the father on the birth certificate. I don't know what, you know... It's like
toxic relationship.
It's crazy, bro.
You named him James Sims Jr., but you didn't put him. Or is that a thing? You know, I don't know. You can a woman can write you down on the birth certificate,
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, but you can write your own name. Did you sign the birth certificate?
Did I sign?
Or was it just signed by
somebody? No, you signed it. You have to sign it. Yeah.
But can the mom sign it and be like, this is him?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Don't know.
All right. Okay. Because I'm trying to figure out if it's
she
like,
can, but she can still go. His name is this.
Even so it's though, that's why it's your son, even though he's not on the birth certificate, but I named him that because he's your son.
I named him after you, yeah.
Yeah, but that's good. That's ammo for him, though. He's like, is my name on the birth certificate? You can name him whatever you want. I didn't agree.
Yeah, so but I'm saying that, I mean, it could possibly not be his son.
Yeah.
She just named
him James Sims Jr.
She just named him after him.
Yeah.
So, but he's like, I'm not the father. My name's not on the birth certificate. I don't know what. She's talking about, I don't know where he is, and it's not my job to report him missing because it's not my child.
That's so cold, though. Like, it's like, I could respect that, but, like, a kid is missing. Like, you didn't report the kid missing? Nah, no. Fuck that kid, man. It's not my kid.
Nope, don't even care. So he said, I would love to talk to Miss Jason's mother, but they don't want us talking, he said. Efforts to locate Jason's mother for comment has been unsuccessful. So Jefferson County Sheriff's Deputy Chief David Adji said that the investigation into Jason's disappearance is ongoing. The detectives have worked tirelessly on the case, even following leads to California, but to no avail. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, as you said. It only takes one bit of information. So they also said they also put on the information of Jason's appearance, asked to call the sheriff's investigation. They had the number of Crime Stoppers. But
this was 6 years ago.
This was 6 years ago. And that was it as far as updates or anything.
So nobody's in jail.
Nobody's in jail. Well, unless he got out.
He got out for something having nothing to do with the kid being dead. 2019,
so he did 2 years. So he's probably getting out soon, right?
Yeah, if he's not out, he's close to being out.
Yeah, and he's going to go do probation. But what I think what happened was that he must have been killed as a child. That's the only thing I can think.
That like somewhere between 99 and 2015.
Maybe probably earlier than that. Because there is no picture of... There's a picture of him maybe at like 3.
So you think she got into some kind of domestic dispute, woke up, accidentally announced that there was a James...
whatever happened. Jr.,
and then they were like, who is this?
I think whatever happened to her, they probably like drugged her or something in the hospital and she woke up like...
And said something she wasn't like, supposed to say.
Yeah.
Because you think you think he had been dead for years.
Yeah.
And then she accidentally started an investigation into something that she knew that he's been gone.
Maybe she like woke up from a dream or something.
Yeah.
And mentioned his name and he's been dead for maybe like 15, 10 years, something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
That's an interesting one. That's dark.
Because that's for him to just for you.
But
to,
that makes it even darker.
For you to wake up from whatever happened. You was unconscious or whatever. For you to wake up and go,
where's my son?
Where's Jason?
Yeah.
And people go, wait, what?
And nobody's ever heard of him.
Yeah. What about the other two?
Yeah.
What about the other three, actually? But what about the other two that everybody knows about? And you go, where's Jason? People are like, wait, what?
Specifically. That's a good theory. Now, but just to be clear, because it's just so much confusion. You started this off. They did live together, right? Jason, James Sr.
Yeah,
and so they were in a relationship and everything like that.
Yeah.
So what your theory would imply that they all knew the both of them, because like nobody knows this kid, they haven't seen him, but the two of them would know if he died 10 years ago.
If
or whatever.
Anything, Jason Sr. is like, I'm washing my hands of this now, and I don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, but let's say Jason Sims Jr. drowned in 2005, and now 2015, he's missing. Where's this kid? And he's basically like, I don't have anything to do with anything, but he knows they have some dark secret, like he died 10 years ago,
something.
And we know that.
Yeah.
So he's just saying, like, that's not my kid, and whatever, but that would imply he's getting away with something really fucked up and dark.
Yeah.
And he just got off with endangering
a
kid or whatever.
Because they had the child, they got called up on for child neglect or whatever.
Yeah, house was a mess.
Yeah, but her to mention, where's my son Jason? And people go like,
who's that?
Who's that? And then they find out about these other two kids, but they end up finding the other one that she mentioned that nobody knew about.
Sure.
But the one that is like, oh, I guess they had some type of, they found record of Jason, but the reason why they keep saying this person doesn't exist because nobody has seen him
right,
physically.
Right.
Nobody
for,
has
for
seen
years,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was autistic. Like, how do you know if he was autistic if he hasn't been, there's no
he's
doctor's
been to the
reports,
hospital, yeah.
Nothing. Like, there's no, they have a...
Has he been diagnosed autistic or, you know,
He hasn't been to the doctor, hasn't been to school, but they have a picture of him as a kid. And that's it.
So fucking strange. Like, how is it this much of a dead end? That's crazy. There's no record of anything?
Nothing.
That's crazy.
He's autistic and nonverbal, which I'm guessing that Miss Wright gave them that information.
Yeah, just because based off her own her
yeah,
because
he wasn't died. Right, exactly.
Not officially in a hospital by a doctor.
He hasn't been to school.
I find that hard to believe. Like, that's just not a thing anymore, especially in 2015. You're capable of not having any record of anything on a person.
Yeah.
Never been to school, never had a doctor's appointment, never been sick.
That's what I think.
Why you think he's been dead for a long time. Because of the burden of him being having mental disabilities.
Yeah. And she had a fucking nightmare because she was unconscious about drugs. I don't know. I'm not going to say that's the reason, but,
but
she had some type
of
nightmare.
Some kind
of
traumatic
flashback
or something came back.
Where's Jason?
And
people
she said it in front of the wrong people.
What?
That's a strong theory. I don't even have a theory to come back. I have no theories on this. It's crazy. he just has gone, like,
that's, I mean, it's just nobody knows.
That's crazy.
Nobody knows where he's at.
Yeah. I'm going to go with your theory. He's been dead. He's been dead for a long time. And that's why there's no answer they can give to go like, oh, we dropped him off at Chuck E. Cheese, or where was the last place he was?
Yeah. The only person that knows where he is
the two parents.
That's right. And Jason Senior, who was like, he has my name.
Done, and I'm done with it. Yeah.
He is not my, and it's not my.
And stop asking me about it.
And it's not my job for me to say he's missing.
You know how cold that is, bro? To be steadfast and like, I don't know where he is, and stop asking me where. I don't care.
Like, I'll take the charge for not putting a missing person report, but it wasn't my job to do that.
And I'm not going to, I'll take the charge. I'll take the charge for not filing the missing persons report.
But just to be clear.
And I'm not going to help you find this person either.
Just to be clear, I don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
He got my name, but I don't know who, I don't know what she's, and I don't know where he is. And
I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, man. When I read, I was like, I'm Googling, and I put up all these different Reddit, they go super deep.
Nothing.
They go super deep. And it's nothing. It's like, it's just nothing. People go like, this is, he just doesn't, what?
Yeah. Weird. Well, if anybody listening has some information or some links they want to pass along, please feel free to let us know. I'm baffled by this one. I have no opinion. I'm just going to ride with your theory. I think your theory is a good one that, you know, something tragic happened to him long ago.
And it was, somebody said that, how would a birth certificate be issued without the child having existed?
Yeah. Same question I have. The kid exists. That's just,
they just, they're made
using
it up.
There's a picture. They're using a picture that they're accelerating. The kid exists. This is crazy, man. I don't even know what to say. Rest in peace to Jason Sims Jr. I don't even know. I don't know what to say. I'm so confused.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
I don't know. I just thought it was
headache.
I just thought it was like, there's a child with a birth certificate.
Insane.
Named after the mom's boyfriend, but he's not the father,
according to him.
And they haven't. Nobody knows that he's. Nobody outside of them
knew there was a Jason. He exists. Jr.
Yeah. Just pop. He just.
So there's no grandparents to be like, oh, I love Jason.
That's what I mean. Nobody knows. And the house was trash.
Yeah.
They had these kids in there, and probably not feeding them and taking care of them. Just, oh my goodness, like, it's crazy, man. I was like, what?
I mean, Jason Sims Jr. could have been a victim of neglect, like, within 6 months of him coming from home from the hospital. It could have been that. He could have died as soon as they brought him home, because it sounds like they don't live a very safe life.
Well, these
for
are the pictures of him. I can show you. That's him.
The bottom ones are the accelerated ones.
The bottom left one
is. Yeah, but the top three are the baby pictures that they have. Picture.
Maybe three at the oldest.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all he has.
Well, prayers up to some answers, man. Yeah. Prayers up for some answers. I don't know what to say off that one, man.
So, jeez. I don't know if the case is still open. But something has to come out. Like, she has to go. Something. I don't know, man. That's Jason Senior is the one I'm like, what? Dude. What?
He's too cold that it's weird. It's like something, you're trying to not incriminate yourself.
That's what I mean. Like, he's trying to clean himself before it get too far. He's like, I said 5 years ago that I don't know
anything.
I don't know anything. He's not my child. We have the same name, but I don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And I don't know where he at. What? Rest in peace to Jason Sims Jr. You know, I don't know. I wish we had answers, but we don't. Hopefully we do. I just thought this was a crazy...
Definitely that.
Crazy case. I would love to hear people's thoughts on this. And
yeah, for sure. Think.
Maybe you can tell me, because I'm not on social media, but maybe you can tell me what people say.
Yeah, I'll make sure I'll let you know if anybody comes and cracks the case.
Yeah, man. Hopefully we find out something. I'll keep an update with it and see what happens, if anything new comes out, but nothing hasn't came out recently.
All right. Well, hey, let's get into these good vibes. Something hopefully that has closure. That's what I need. You left me without closure, man.
Sorry.
I need a story that has closure. Good vibration.
All right, welcome back. It's a good vibe segment. My laptop is about to die.
Oh, man.
But my good vibe this week is about, I'm sure you know who this guy is, Dick Van Dyke.
Yes, I do.
So he may be best known
legend
for his delightful rooftop dance moves while playing a chimney sweep in Mary Poppins. But Dick Van Dyke hasn't slipped into retirement since his breakthrough in the 1964 role.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago.
Chim Chimney Chim Chim Chiru.
In fact, the 95 years old has been caught doing all sorts of good deeds over the years. His latest kindness, last week the actor showed up in Los Angeles at Los Angeles Malibu Community Labor Exchange and began handing out cash to job seekers waiting in line outside the nonprofit.
Mm.
So helping others has been an important part of Van Dyke's life for decades. He's known for spending over 20 years volunteering at L.A. Shelter, the Midnight Mission. He's also served as a spokesperson for the Cell Therapy Foundation and the National, Rees Syndrome Foundation.
Damn, I don't know. Not familiar.
The last time we shared the good news relating to this Hollywood legend, it was to report on Van Dyke's dancing with his real life wife, Arlene Silva, in the most joyful music video ever, for bluegrass group Dust Bowl, Revival.
Oh.
So, and then there was the time he treated diners at a Santa Monica Denny's to a spontaneous performance of Chitty 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 Bang Bang with his Coppola group.
I used to love that movie.
Vent with that movie?
Mm-hmm.
I never seen it.
It's a flying car. It's really old. It's good.
When did you see that?
I was like 7 years old.
Oh, shit. But he was saying that his secret to aging gracefully was by giving to others and dancing and singing whenever he can. So there's a gift that was on Twitter, 93, when he was in the department store just doing some moves.
Just grinding, just grooving. Yeah, he's probably like 75. And
my laptop just died, so it was perfect
time. Oh, yeah, cool. Well, shout out to Dick Van Dyke, man. 95. Yeah. Sometimes when you... You know, hopefully he gets as much life as he can out of it. But I feel like when it's winding down, man, that's when a lot of people say, I'm giving away my fortune.
Yeah.
I'm doing this. Yeah. I'm going to go do that. But apparently he's been doing that his whole life. But I feel like, hey, I'm in the twilight of my life. Things are coming to an end. I'm do some positive things for some people.
As much as I say I want to live to 100, I think it's also probably scary when you're like, am I going to wake up tomorrow?
I feel like. 95 years old, I feel like I would hope you've accepted that by now. I don't know how. If Betty White wakes up scared that she's not going to wake up, like, come on, man. You lived, man. You did it. Every day I see a picture of Betty White on a couple on Twitter, I'm like, oh, rest in peace. They're like, no, Betty she's White bought some muffins today. You're like, oh, all right. Well, never mind. Well, yeah.
How old is she?
Like 98 years old.
She's 98? No, she's
White,
not.
Bro, Betty White. I have a conspiracy. Hot take. I'm gonna turn this down for a second before I get into the good vibes. I don't want to distract. I have a sneaking suspicion that Betty White is like on life support, or I haven't seen her in public in a while. Everybody just keeps saying like, oh, shout out to Betty White. Betty White's still alive, but like she hasn't been.
She's 99 years old.
Yeah, bro. Betty White has not been on TV like, oh, hey guys, it's me, Betty White. Hello, kids. Like, she hasn't been doing that in like 7 years. I haven't seen Betty White around. So they might just be keeping her functioning.
Right?
Yeah. Well, 99 years old, you should be retired. But I'm just saying, I don't know if Betty White is a spry 99. She might be holding on.
22.
Yeah, bro. She might be holding on for dear life, you know. And shout out to Betty White, man. I hope she's doing well. But 99 years old. And, you know, all these jokes on Twitter. Oh, man, Betty White might be a vampire. Bro, I have not seen Betty White in public in some time. But she is delightful.
She's seen a lot of shit.
She's seen it all, man.
Wow.
She's seen it all. And she's been in some hilarious things. I'm just saying, I have not seen her in public in some time. But I'm not gonna linger on that. I'm not wishing death on Betty White. Yeah. Hope she makes it to 105. Hope she makes it to 105, you know. I'm just saying my conspiracy is like, that was a little dark. I'm hoping she makes it to 105. I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just saying I haven't seen her in a while. Anyway, Speaking of death, my good vibe story is about, you know, the forest funeral industry, the tree funeral industry, which is something I'm very interested in.
What, so, is a big tree?
Well, big funeral.
Oh, big funeral
is trying to stop tree funerals.
What is it called?
They don't have a big engine. They're just doing it for the people, man. They're not a conglomerate. The funeral industry is the scam.
Yeah.
And they're trying to stop anybody that's trying to prevent them from eating. Big time. You know, most funeral homes that have like a family name on them are not, they're just licensed. They don't even own the business. They're licensed by a conglomerate or like a corporation.
Oh.
So like Johnson Family Funeral Homes, they use that name so you feel like, oh, it's a family. They're going to take care of me and my family because they know how to take care of families because that's what they do. And really, they're like a McDonald's. Like, they're just a chain.
Yeah.
And they just let them have that name because it feels like it takes advantage of people's emotions. Like, oh, I want my family to be buried by a family.
Mm.
And it's just a scam. It's all so many scams.
I delivered to a funeral home a couple of times. You know they have a casket magazine?
Yeah. It's a... Do you not hear what I'm saying? Yes. It's all a scam. They try to find way. There's always new products coming out.
But a magazine, though?
Yeah, man. They got to tell you. Here's the Cadillac of... Here's the... Yeah.
We
should order 5 of these. I think these would sell. Because they probably buy them in bulk from the magazines, the funeral homes. They're like, can we sell a gold casket? Let's order one out of the magazine. I'm sure we can get somebody to buy it. If we sell this, we make our nut for the year. That's how people in the funeral industry talk. They're like, man, we got to move these. Tell people about these caskets more. We got to get these off the shelves. They're collecting dust. They talk like it's fucking a Costco.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man, it's an industry. Death is an industry. It is what it is. But I'm just saying, they're trying to exile people who are trying to stop the toxic and pollutant industry of funerals. Anybody trying to change the industry for the good, they're like, get them the fuck out of here.
If you get a black-owned funeral?
Would I like it?
Or would you?
I don't want to be buried in a casket, so I wouldn't like... If they're doing that, then no. Not me.
Oh, you want to be a tree.
I want to be a tree.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I'll go into detail.
Can't be owned by animals, though.
No, it would be a private. It would be a private forest. It wouldn't be animals and shit.
Okay.
Anyway, every year the funeral industry consumes 20 million feet of hardwood, 64,000 tons of steel, 1.6 million tons of concrete, and 5 million gallons of embalming chemicals. One of the most popular reasons to choose cremation is the idea that people want to take up less space and also to reduce the burden on Earth, according to Gibbons, a person who's in charge of, what's the name of this company? Better Place Forests.
Hmm.
As the cost of traditional casket service cemetery funerals continues to rise ever higher in the U.S., it's estimated that 80% of baby boomers' generation will choose cremation. If you wanted a 10 to 20 person family plot, which is crazy, I'm not even concerned, like, I don't have concerns about being buried near 10 or 20 people in my family. Like, to be like, we need enough space to have the whole family buried near each other, and you're talking about 10 to 20 people? That's crazy. But anyway, a 10 to 20 person family plot anywhere near a major city, I'd be incredibly surprised if you could find that for less than $200,000.
Damn.
Says Sandy, a person who's working in the funeral industry.
Oh, this is a scam.
Adding that despite the shift towards cremation, Americans haven't lost the desire for a place or ritual with their family. So they still want a place for your family to be able to come and say hi to you. Our customers are drawn to Better Place Forests because they love the idea of being in nature and leaving a legacy of nature. For those who are very religious, for those who are very religious, for them, nature is the place they felt closest to God. The choice of cremation and the subsequent scattering of ashes ceremony releases the bereaved from the constraints of the traditional funeral service, which is typically planned without much time and under duress of grief. So, you know, they're basically just shitting on funerals in this article. But in a funny way, that freedom creates a significant complication for some, in that what is perceived as a very important detail in one's life story, their funeral, has to be imagined from within a far greater realm of possibilities. This, Sandy said, can create a sort of funerary writer's block, which Better Place Funerals helps people overcome, especially those who are environmentally minded. So they're trying to save the planet, bro. Funerals are disgusting. The bodies end up leaking into the soil after a couple of years when they decompose. There's just nothing good about putting stuff in the ground. Anyway, part of its legacy of conservation, knowing that you contributed to the protection of the beautiful forest, and then it's protected for future generations because of something you did, When you walk by one of these forests, that's when it makes sense. We choose properties that are incredibly beautiful, trying to find properties that are iconic in each region. So basically, they're preserving forests and using them to plant trees, which are you.
People.
Yeah. Well, people's, they're turning their essence into whatever fertilizes a tree.
Okay.
So they're planting trees, building these forests, and then these forests become conservatories. Like, you can't cut down, I want a Christmas tree. Let me go cut down Frederick. Mm-hmm. Like, no, these are protected trees. So they basically are building forests that are protected and can't be cut down.
Okay.
So they're creating these little beautiful areas. There's a whole bunch of other stuff, but this isn't a commercial for Better Place Funerals. You know, I just always want to continue to push for, you know, the traditional funeral is very dangerous and bad for the environment. So there are new ways to transition to the afterlife. You know, it doesn't, you know, this idea that you need to put on a nice suit and a watch and all this shit and then throw it into the ground and then you decompose and all that shit is just in the earth, not being contributing to the earth, but being a detriment. It's just not good, bro. Cremate yourself, turn yourself into a tree, fucking, I don't know, burn yourself on a pyre. Do something that's not going to be toxic to the environment. There's already so many things that are dangerous.
Well, cremation does too, right?
Does what?
Hurts the environment?
Hurt?
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Oh, it don't like go into the...
The smoke of a body?
Yeah.
That's no worse than like the fumes from a giant ship.
It's still the same thing though, right?
Not the same thing. No.
It's not?
I disagree. No, because people burn stuff all the time. If you burn a tree, it's not... I think it's what's being burned. If you're burning fossil fuels, that's bad. But I don't know if the things that are in a body being burnt are going to put a hole in the ozone layer.
Yeah.
But
either, I don't like how when people die and they get cremated, they spread it. They throw the ashes away. I don't like that for some reason.
What if that's somebody's request though?
I guess.
Go on a family trip to Australia, throw me into the ocean in Australia.
It's not going anywhere. It's just an ocean. I get it.
It's symbolic.
I don't get it.
Where do you want it to go? It's dead.
Keep it in what is the urn?
Keep it in your house?
Yeah.
For what?
Just sit there.
And do what?
I don't know. Store it on the ground?
What? On the ground in a beautiful scenic area. Spread me into the nature. You'd rather be trapped in like a two-bedroom apartment?
How are you trapped?
You're in a jar.
But you're not. But you're trapped?
Yeah.
In a jar?
What if those ash, that's his essence. What if they, so you got your essence trapped in a jar in a two-bedroom apartment in Skokie, Illinois?
You open it up every now and then. Let it breathe.
You could do what?
Open it up.
You want to be interacting with the ashes?
No, you say it's trapped, so you can open it up.
That's what I'm saying. You want to be like every couple of days, you're like, let me open you up here, Uncle Frank. Let me get you some breeze. Smell the Buffalo, New York air.
Yeah.
Man, take me to Fiji and dump me down a waterfall. If you're gonna cremate me, spread me. That's my opinion. If I was to get cremated, I would be like, I want my family, like, take me somewhere beautiful. Dump my ashes there, and then you guys can come back and visit there every year.
Different spots,
bit of each.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're making work for your family members. Like, yeah, take me, go to Japan. I want some of me in Japan. I want some of me in New Mexico. Go ahead and take a little bit of me in Jamaica.
Put in a little plastic bag.
Yeah, put a little dime bag of me. Yeah. Take a little dime bag of me. Drop me off in Greenland.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's work.
That sounds cool.
Actually, no, that does sound kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like every time you go on a trip, throw a little, you know, take a little Coke spoon, dump a couple ounces of me into a little baggie, you know, make sure TSA knows, hey, this is my dad.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
My dad.
This is my dad in a Coke bag.
Yeah.
This is my dad right here. I'm taking him to Scotland. I want to dump a little bit of him in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, actually it's kind of fly.
Well, smoke it. Can you smoke it? Can you smoke ashes?
Oh, you are different today.
Can you though?
Whatever you want, I guess. You could you sprinkle a little bit of your ancestors into a blunt and smoke them. Yeah, you could do that.
There you go.
Why would you want to do that?
I'm just coming up with ideas.
Oh, I didn't know this was a brainstorming session with ashes. I didn't know that's
just coming up with ideas.
I didn't know that's what we fell into.
I think it's a pretty intimate moment.
Yeah, that is intimate for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you smoking
the ashes, going to the
smoking your favorite uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, that's interesting.
Uncle Pete. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I definitely, I like that
idea.
It's
like growing a tree.
I like the traveling idea more than smoking my
favorite. With little pieces?
Take little bags.
That
and then,
is pretty cool.
Like, leave a really, now you got me thinking, right? What if, right, your final wish is you leave your like notes or your last will and testament, mm-hmm. and you're like, let's say your son, my daughter, whoever, yeah. I go, I'm leaving you $50,000. Mm-hmm. I want you to travel the world, mm-hmm. and I've asked to be cremated, and I want you to take a little bit of me, and everywhere you go, just find a really cool space. Have a good time on your trip, but take a little bit of time, find an hour or some time, go somewhere peaceful, and just dump a little bit of me where you are so we can take one last trip together.
Yeah.
I want you to go to as many places you can go with $50,000.
Yeah.
Budapest, you know, Pakistan. I want you to go wherever you can go, Istanbul. Go all the places you can go, take a little bit of with me everywhere you go, sprinkle me and every little part of the continent, every part of the country you can go to. Go to West Africa, sprinkle me a little bit there. And just have a little intimate moment with me.
Yeah.
And that'll be how you say goodbye to me.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool. I think that would be cool. Genuinely. So,
but when they cremate you, do they take organs out still?
I don't know. I mean, if you're an organ donor, they will definitely take your organs out. But as far as like just taking your organs out just because, I don't know if they do that when you're cremated. I think they just throw you in there.
Yeah.
But if you're an organ donor, I think they would take your organs.
I just don't get it. You can cut this, but I just want to talk. I just don't understand how, you know, when you cremate or when you buried.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the body though. It's not what made you you.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But you gotta do something with the body. Are you saying you don't understand funerals?
No, I'm just saying when you go, when they had these memorials, like it's
sure.
It's just the body of the person. But it's like,
you mean the memorial like somewhere that you go?
Yeah.
But like where the body is.
Yeah. But I'm talking about like what made you you is like your personality,
yeah.
your brain. Mm-hmm. That's gone. It's yeah. just but it's not like you having this moment with this person. Is just the body of the person.
Well, I think that's why this Better Place Funerals place is saying we want to have a place to where, yes, that body is gone, but you can still have a place where you're having an intimate moment with that person somewhere special, like the way that going to somebody's grave is, yeah. but it's not harming the environment. So they're basically meeting you in the middle. They're saying, like, we agree with you. It's just a body. The person's spirit is gone, but that body can be used to create something beautiful, and then you can go to that beautiful place and you feel like the essence of that person created this beautiful space.
Yeah, true.
You know, okay. as opposed to just going and looking at a headstone.
Yeah. What if you go back and the shit just like
they cut all the trees down?
Shit browns like,
oh, the trees died?
Yeah, it's like,
oh, that's depressing. He died again. God, yeah, that's double heartbreak.
Anybody take care of the tree?
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I would hope they have like, you know, grounds people or something. But you know, when it's fall,
not during the pandemic,
oh, it's true. Or when it's fall, when it's fall, you know, you start seeing your dad turn brown and the leaves fall. You're like, damn, that's just that's kind of a bummer. Every fall, you gotta. But then in the springtime, it's like a rebirth.
I guess
the trees reblossom and stuff.
Yeah, nobody out there in the wintertime anyway. Yeah, that's true. Nobody's gonna visit the trees in the
wintertime. Yeah, that's true.
You die again for three months.
Yeah, my dad died again. He'll be back in February.
He'll be back.
I don't have any recommendation or anything, man. I'm tired. Yeah, this has been another episode of Affirmative Murder. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Franco Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.